Monster Man, Episode 125, Screaming Devilkin to Shadow Demon. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're looking at a couple of monsters from the S chapter of the Fiend Folio, the 1981 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. Now, there are only going to be two monsters in today's episode, and this is a little bit of an experiment on my part. I've been receiving some feedback over the last week or so, and I really appreciate hearing what you, my listeners, think is working and what is not working about the show. And one of the comments that I've received is that people are enjoying the show, but that they wish I would sort of slow down a little. Everyone says they enjoy the special episodes because I get to spend more time on individual monster. And they feel that maybe, you know, there are kind of like, I'm maybe at this putting three monsters in an episode, I'm sort of packing them in and maybe not giving each individual monster time to breathe, right? Like if it doesn't have an obvious hook, maybe I need to just explore it in more detail. So I'm going to give it a try. And for at least the next little bit, I think I'm going to try and go down to a two-monster standard and maybe just try to explore these monsters in a little bit more detail, so we'll see how it goes. Anyway, our first monster for today's episode is the Screaming Devilkin, which is created by Philip Masters. I was genuinely surprised to find that this was not a Fiend Factory monster. So the Screaming Devilkin is a bit, it sort of reminds me a bit of a gargoyle. It's a little creature, kind of imp or cherub-sized, and it has, you know, horns and wings and a lashy barbed tail, and it is not a demon or a devil, and has nothing to do with demons or devils. It just looks exactly like a demon or devil. And it flies around, and its form of attack is it whips people with its tail. It has arms and legs, but it can't really actually use them. It can't walk. It just has these feeble little legs, but they're basically vestigial. And is known as the Screaming Devilkin because it shrieks if it comes, you know, if it sees another creature. It just shrieks, and you have to make a saving throw or be unable to do anything. And even if you pass the saving throw, while this thing is emitting its piercing shriek, all other forms of conversation are impossible. Like, you can cast a spell that requires spoken components because, you know, you just have to say them. It doesn't actually matter if the target of the spell can hear you. But any other, like, form of communication between the characters just becomes impossible. And that's it. It hits you with its tail. It always attacks. This is a really weird creature. And it's strange because it basically combines two aspects of monster design that don't seem like they would normally fit together well, because we're quite insistent that this is not a demon or a devil, right? This is a biological creature that just happens to look like what we would think of as a demon or a devil. But then also, it has a more kind of like supernatural set of motivations and abilities, right? You could argue that the shrieking is a sonic attack, but it's a weird behavior for an animal to just bum rush everything on sight. What is this thing? How did it come to be? The word that I would choose to describe it is grotesque. It has these grotesque features. It's horrible to be around because of its piercing shriek. And I can definitely see that this might be a creature that is like intentionally created as a sentry. You have to imagine some evil wizard who created these things, and he made them look like devils to signal his allegiance to the fiends of hell, or just to be more intimidating to people. Their devilish appearance must be for aesthetic effect. Someone created them so that they would look like devils, and presumably positioned them on, you know, the periphery of his evil fortress, as much to act as alarms as to actually do anything. You know, it does say that you can resist the Screaming Devilkin's attacks if you've got your ears well stopped up. So I do feel like, you know, earlier on, right, when you kill those hobgoblin patrols and you search their bodies and you're like, huh, they've all got earmuffs. What's that all about? Hobgoblins with earmuffs, huh? And if some forethoughtful PC goes, you know what, I'm just going to take a pair of these earmuffs. Call me paranoid. I feel like that's a fun little detail that you can add, right? The Screaming Devilkin paralyzes people, and then all the creatures that can't hear, all the deaf guards, or the people with balls of wax in their ears, or the robots who've just had their hearing switched off, come in and they bust up the PC party. I think that's got potential. What this monster has in common with the next monster in this episode is that it is one that is really enhanced by thinking about the sensory landscape of the game. And thinking about it more than just like in an immediate tactical sense. Because a lot of the time we only think about things like sound and visibility and whatever when we're, you know, specifically talking tactics. But I think if you take a larger kind of dungeon-wide approach to them, the Screaming Devilkin becomes much more interesting because you can hear it presumably from a long way away. So you have to think about it in terms of it being not just something that's intended to paralyze people with its sonic shriek, but also kind of like an alarm system. A bit like a shrieker from the Monster Manual, only more horrid, which is a weird thing to say, about a giant semi-sentient mushroom. Now, I mentioned that our next monster was all about the sensory landscape of the dungeon, and that is because it is the Shadow Demon created by Neville White. And this was a Fiend Factory monster. It appeared in White Dwarf magazine. Indeed, I think it's the last Fiend Factory column that has creatures in the Fiend Folio. There's a cutoff date, which, because of the Fiend Folio's complex publishing history, is significantly before the book comes out, I think. But anyway, this is basically, it's a bit like the Shadow from the Monster Manual, but it resembles the Shadow, but it isn't the same at all, kind of cosmologically, because the Shadow in the Monster Manual is a creature from, you know, a negative plane. It's a creature of negative energy, and it, you know, has energy drain and stuff like that, whereas the Shadow Demon is a demon bound into the form of a shadow, often done with a lesser demon. And they mentioned the idea that this is one of those. Remember, we talked way back in the Monster Manual, we talked about how Manes, you know, one of the lowest levels of these demons or devils, whichever one it is, whichever one's not Lemures, can be turned into things, that they're just kind of raw material. And this is one of the things that they can be turned into. I sort of prefer the idea that this is, in fact, a demon's shadow, that it can detach its shadow and send it out to wreak mischief on the prime material plane, you know, maybe by some, like, loophole in its contract that forbids it from going onto the prime material plane, but actually it can still, like, pop off its shadow and send it through some kind of portal. That'd be kind of interesting. I always like that. I always like that image of sort of a character without a shadow, and then that question of where the shadow is. There was a Legends of the Dark Knight, it's a Batman comic story from the early 1990s called Gothic. I think it was reprinted in a trade paperback as Whispers, written by Grant Morrison with art by Klaus Johnson. And that has a villain who is this guy who is, you know, has basically sold his soul to the devil for immortality. And the sign of his immortality is that he has no shadow. And it's, you know, he's in his soul, which is in an object, you know, whatever. It's inside an egg, inside a duck on an island, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's not any of those things. It's in a little piece of string. But I've always, perhaps ever since I read that comic in my youth, I've always liked that kind of shadow imagery of having, you know, characters without shadows, or, as in the case of the Shadow Demon, shadows without creatures, right? This is a shadow, but there's nothing to cast it. The mechanical thing of the Shadow Demon, and this is the main focus of the Fiend Factory entry, is that it gets more powerful in the dark. So it is it's weakened by the presence of bright light. In daylight, it's very weak. And in absolute darkness, it's very powerful. This also feels a bit strange to me, right? Because maybe I'll just never be able to think of shadow monsters in the same way after the Song of Ice and Fire books, in which, of course, they make the point that shadows are created by light. Right? If you really want a powerful shadow, you need a bright light source to cast it. Whereas in dim light, shadows are kind of weak and fuzzy and blurry. So I sort of feel like, you know, maybe you could think a little more subjectively about what a shadow would look like in a particular lighting environment. But, you know, for the sake of argument, I definitely like the idea that you harm this thing by casting a light spell on it, right? If you shine a light right on it so that there's nothing, you know, there's no way there could be a shadow there, then it's severely weakened and you can go ahead and beat it up some. It does have the ability to cast darkness and fear, which give it a pretty good first strike attack, right? So the idea is that it identifies the party, and then using its ability to blend into the shadows, right? It's very hard to spot. There's only a 10% chance to see it. It tails the party until they're in the kind of low-light environment where it's strongest. Then it pops in, drops that darkness and fear, and, you know, wallops the first one. And I think that that's I wrote, this thing's got a really good alpha, and then I felt very bad about myself. But it does. I don't know, I've always liked monsters that were shadows. I think I said that back when we covered the Shadow in Season 1. And The Shadow Demon is no exception. It feels a little bit more manageable, and it's a shadow monster that has a more, like, plausibly mythical-sounding explanation, which I like. I'm never a big fan of monsters whose explanation relies on, the planar ecology of D&D, because I just never really use it very much. But I do like the idea that, like, when you sell your soul to the devil, it takes away your shadow, but then they bind a demon into your shadow, and it runs around causing mayhem, carrying out errands for its diabolical master. You know, maybe this is one of the ways in which demons can come to this plane, right? That their worshippers have to agree to give up their shadow to the demon, and then it turns into a shadow demon, and then it goes off causing havoc. I think it's at its least interesting when it's lurking around a dungeon waiting for a party of adventurers to go past, but it's definitely the kind of thing that would be in the same evil temple as those screaming devilkin. In fact, it might be that the, you know, whatever evil wizard long ago created the screaming devilkin, well, he was slain by a righteous blah blah blah, and the only thing that survived was his shadow in the form of a shadow demon. I don't know that a shadow demon is necessarily a dungeon boss, but I still think it's a pretty fun image. Maybe all of his inner circle, his coven, had their shadows transformed into demons. That'd be kind of neat. And then they could be different from each other in interesting ways. But, again, both of these, there's actually a note. Don Turnbull wrote little editorial comments on each of the Fiend Factory entries, and I do sort of wish that they had been reproduced. I have a hope, and right now my schedule doesn't really permit it, but what I'd really like to do is do some special episodes that are on the Fiend Factory entries that didn't make it into the Fiend Folio. That could maybe be some Patreon bonus content or something like that. But he says, you know, this is only going to really work if you're carefully keeping track of the light sources. And I do feel like I always feel of two minds about carefully keeping track of the light sources. Three minds. I feel of three minds about carefully keeping track of the light sources. On the one hand, I think it's a very good idea because it's another, like, tactical element. It, kind of rewards people for thinking about the practicalities of dungeon exploration, and that maybe focuses their attention on the exploration aspects of the game and not just the we're going to fight in a series of fight rectangles linked by cutscenes. And that's something that I really am in favor of treating this as a game about exploration, of which combat is a part. The second reason that I like it is that it's atmospheric, right? It's much better to think about this dungeon lit by the flickering light of oil lamps or the eerie glow of bioluminescent fungus or pale shafts of moonlight streaming down through the cracks in the ceiling. All of those things are cool, and thinking about having a reason to think about them helps keep them foremost in the player's minds, and that makes the dungeon more visually appealing. And the only reason that I don't like keeping track of the light sources is because it just hoses humans over even more, right? As the only poor swine that don't have some method of seeing in the dark, like, being a human is bad enough. That may not be true in earlier editions of D&D. I always play humans. I don't know why. You'd think I'd play dwarfs. I definitely seem like a dwarf guy, but I always play humans. And you're always the only poor doofus in the party who can't see in the dark. It's enough to make you want to get some, like, steampunky-looking alchemical night vision goggles, and then you feel like you're betraying the spirit of old-school D&D or something. I guess that's why people hire torchbearers. If you've ever seen the film The Resurrected, it's a low-budget horror movie based on the novel The Case of Charles Dexter Ward by H.P. Lovecraft, and it has this one wonderful scene where, spoilers, I guess, for a movie that's like 30 years old, 25 years old, they're exploring this underground cavern full of pits in which the, like, mad sorcerer has dumped all his sort of failed experiments in resurrecting the dead. So they're all kind of like these hideous, half-finished monstrosities. And one of them lurches out at the characters from the pit, and there's a character who's holding a lantern in one hand and a shotgun in the other. And the thing lurches at him, and he swings up the shotgun, in the process dropping the lantern so that he can hold the gun. And so the scene goes totally dark, and then there's just like this stop-motion effect as the scene is lit by the muzzle flashes of him firing the gun at the monster. It's super effective. I'm not recommending that whole movie. I mean, it's fine. It's fine. It's a fine movie. But that scene is really atmospheric, and I really like it. So you think about your lighting, you get to do stuff like shadow demons, and for that matter, dark creepers and so forth, right? Like, stealthy monsters get a lot better, and they feel like less of a cheat. Okay, well, wow, that went to nearly 20 minutes on just two monsters. So I think this two monster standard is actually not a bad one. But tell me what you think. I'm interested to hear whether you'd rather go back to three or whether you're happy with just two monsters per episode. Anyway, next time on Monster Man, we got some special monsters coming up because we're going to talk about a very, like, literal creature in the form of the Sheet Ghoul and the Sheet Phantom, or whatever they're called in this version. That's next time on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.